through the book of Ecclesiastes, and tonight we're halfway through already. So we'll continue. We'll take all of chapter 6 this evening, Lord willing. Read the text first. You can either follow along with me or just listen. So there's an evil which I've seen under the sun, and is common among men. A man to whom God has given riches and wealth and honor, so that he lacks nothing for himself of all he desires. Yet God does not give him power to eat of it, but a foreigner consumes it. This is vanity. It's an evil affliction. If a man begets 100 children, lives many years, so that the days of his years are many. But his soul is not satisfied with goodness. Or indeed, he has no burial. Then he adds a second illustration. I say that a stillborn child is better than he. For it comes in vanity, departs in darkness. Its name is covered with darkness. Though it has not seen the sun or known anything, this has more rest than that man. Even if he lives 1,000 years twice, but has not seen goodness, do not all go to one place. Verse 7. The labor of a man is for his mouth, and yet the soul is not satisfied. For what more has the wise man than the foolish man or the fool? What does the poor man have? Who knows how to walk before the living? Better, in verse 9, better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of desire or the dreamer. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. Whatever one is, he's been named already. For it is known that he is man. He cannot contend with him who is mightier than he. Since there are many things that increase vanity, how is man the better? And two questions in chapter verse 12. Or who knows what is good for man in life? All the days of his vain life, which he passes like a shadow. Second question. Who can tell a man what will happen after him under the sun? A few interesting phrases. So I put in your notes, in this lesson we're going to discover three places we will not find eternal joy and meaning under the sun. Now, achievement is not inherently wrong. There's nothing wrong with gain, labor, joy, the fruit of labor. Nothing wrong with that. But it does not provide eternal satisfaction. And that's one major point of this chapter. I think Mick Jagger saying, I can't get no satisfaction. And I try. And I try. And I don't know. And I try. But Solomon now gives these three areas in this chapter which fail in man's search for meaning without God. Number one, he says these are an evil, they're under the sun, and they're common among men. So here's the first one in verses 2 through 6. Materialism is common among men. In verse 2, this man given riches. It's an evil affliction, he says. So we know that our riches are a resource under the sun to pay bills. In this verse it says, this man lacks nothing for himself. That's right, enjoy the fruit of your labor. That's in chapter 5, verse 18. And provide for retirement, all those things. That's why we work. But now let's go a little bit of history with Solomon. Solomon started out wisely in building a beautiful temple in Jerusalem. He got his riches from God. Remember that. 2 Chronicles 1, verse 11, God said to Solomon, because this was in your heart, and you've not asked for riches or wealth or honor or the life of your enemies, nor have you asked for long life, but you've asked for wisdom and knowledge for yourself, that you may have people over whom I have made you king. So wisdom and knowledge are granted to you. And I will give you riches and wealth and honor, such as none of the kings have had who were before you. Nor shall any after you have the like. So then with those riches and wisdom, Solomon starts out building a beautiful temple in Jerusalem. And in 1 Kings 6, verse 38, it says, the house was finished in all its details and according to all its plans. So he was 7 years in building it. But then, point number one here, materialism got in his way. And in 1 Kings chapter 7, verse 1, right after chapter 6, verse 38, says God's house took 7 years to build. It says, but Solomon took 13 years to build his own house. So he finished all his house. And there were other things that happened to Solomon. You're familiar with it, but I'll just read from 1 Kings chapter 11, beginning of verse 1. What about Solomon? King Solomon loved many foreign women, as well as the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites, from the nations of whom the Lord had said to the children of Israel, you shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you. Surely they will turn away your hearts after other gods. Solomon clung to these in love. He had 700 wives, princesses, 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. For it was so, when Solomon was old, that his wives turned his heart after other gods. His heart was not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David. For Solomon went after Ashtaroth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, did not fully follow the Lord, as did his father David. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, on a hill that's east of Jerusalem. And for Molech, he built a high place for Molech, the abomination of the people of Ammon. And he did likewise for all his foreign wives who burned incense and sacrificed to their gods. Verse 9, so the Lord became angry with Solomon because his heart had turned from the Lord God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice and had commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods. But he did not keep what the Lord had commanded. So when God is pushed to the side under the sun in our life, Solomon's riches became self-serving. Put in your notes a quote by Warren Wiersbe. To enjoy the gifts without the giver is idolatry. Have you ever thought of it that way? To enjoy the gifts without the giver is idolatry and can never satisfy the human heart. Enjoyment without God is merely entertainment, and it does not satisfy. But enjoyment with God is enrichment, and it brings true joy and satisfaction. So the first man that Solomon is talking about, you know, he's about the resources. Yes, he's blessed. Certainly is. And so now in verse 3, we're introduced to a man. He begets 100 children and lives many years. But his soul is not satisfied with goodness. or indeed he has no burial. Verse 6 continues about this man, even if he lives 1,000 years twice. So Solomon is now using a little exaggeration to make a point. You know, this man lives a long years, even if it goes 1,000 years twice. You know, Methuselah lived 969, and this man, Solomon, said, we're going to say that he lives 2,000 years. It's interesting that Rehoboam, Solomon's son, had 88 children. In 2 Chronicles 11, verse 21, says, now Rehoboam took 18 wives and 60 concubines and begat 28 sons and 60 daughters. As you know, in the Old Testament, two things indicated God's blessing. Years and number of children. Remember when God called Abraham? Abraham, what's the promise? Not just the land. I'm going to give you years and children. Sarah was there. Oh, I need to hear that. Blessings. So Solomon introduces us to this man. But he concludes that this blessed man, with all these years and all the children, has no burial. That's not a good thing in Judaism, is it? Sign of disrespect. So this man's riches, this man's long life, many children, failed to deliver, and it became, as Solomon said, an evil affliction, and no rest. So now we're introduced to a second person in verse 3. The last phrase of verse 3. I say that a stillborn child is better than he. Well, we just all heard about a blessed man. Lots of years and lots of children and riches. But a stillborn child is better than he. In verse 4, this stillborn child never sees the light of day. In verse 5, Solomon said, this, that stillborn child, has more rest than that man. So I put in your notes the point. A stillborn child is better off than a man who lives without God. Wow, what a point to make. To get to the end of your life with riches, but without God, is worse than never having lived. Solomon, bring that point home. There's a tombstone inscription had written on it, said, stop, my friend, as you go by. As you are now, so once was I. As I am now, you soon shall be. So prepare yourself to follow me. A passerby saw that tombstone inscription and read it. He decided to leave a response. So he left a note that said, to follow you, I'm not content until I know which way you went. Well, that's kind of what Solomon is saying. You can live the most blessed life, in that exaggeration, 2,000 years. But if it's without God, vanity. Saw this poem. I don't know the author. It's called, maybe you've heard it before, The Dash. I read of a man who stood to speak at the funeral of a friend. He referred to the dates on her tombstone, from the beginning to the end. He noted that first came her date of birth, and spoke the following date with tears. But he said what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. For that dash represents all time that she spent alive on earth. And now only those who loved her know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we live and love, and how we spend our dash. So think about this long and hard. Are there things you'd like to change? For you never know how much time is left that can still be rearranged. We could just slow down enough to consider what's true and real, and always try to understand the way other people feel. And be less quick to anger and show appreciation more. And love the people in our lives like we've never done before. If we treat each other with respect and more often wear a smile, remembering that this special dash might only last a little while. So, when your eulogy's being read, with your life's actions to rehash, would you be proud of the things they say about how you spent your dash? The dash. Well, that's what Solomon's saying. This man who has everything, the riches, the children, the years, all without God. Let me tell you about a stillborn child, didn't see the light of day, but has rest and is better off than this man that had all these things. So materialism, don't make that your God. Number two, in verses 7 through 9, all working, workaholic. Mm-hmm. In verse 7, here's another thing that he said is an evil, an affliction. The workaholic, that leaves out God, is the point. Verse 7, all the labor of man is for his mouth, yet the soul is not satisfied. So, the lesson we've been reading in all these chapters, yes, enjoy work and enjoy all that it provides, but to expect your work to be eternally fulfilling under the sun is to ask more than it can deliver. Eugene Peterson stated this verse this way. He said, we work to feed our appetite. Meanwhile, our souls go hungry. That's what Solomon said. All the labor of man's for his mouth. In other words, my appetite. But the soul is not satisfied. It goes hungry. So the man that works and leaves out God. If your work dominates your life, you go spiritually hungry. Building a rewarding career without God is a dangerous work. You have to put God in it. In verse 8, he talks about a wise and a foolish person. You know, if they stand before God in judgment, God's not going to inquire about their career. How is your work under the sun? No. He's going to ask, are you in Christ Jesus? Romans 8, verse 1 says, therefore there is now no condemnation to those who are in Christ Jesus, who do not walk according to the flesh, but according to the Spirit. That's what Solomon says here. You can work, enjoy, fulfill the appetite, but be sure that God is included in your life. In verse 9, Solomon's version of a bird in the hand is worth more than two in the bush. I think I left a word out in your notes. He mentions the dreamer, or in the New King James Version, it says the wandering of desire. Yeah, that workaholic. That's good until it separates you from reality and you start living in a fantasy world. I'm just going to dream, you know, one day this will be mine, or one day I'll move here, one day everything will be great. That dreamer. Adam Clark says, it's better to enjoy the present than feed oneself with vain desires of the future. That's the dreamer. Nothing wrong with dreaming in preparation for the future. That's not the point. But when living for the future, one never gets around to enjoy today, and that's the workaholic. Well, I'm going to work so I can have a great retirement. You may not live for retirement. Psalm 16, verse 11, David said, concerning God, you will show me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy. All your right at your right hand are pleasures forevermore. God. With God, David said, is fullness of joy. God's right hand are pleasures forevermore. So that's point number two. Solomon said, there's an evil among us. Materialism, now the workaholic that leaves God out. The last one in verses 10 through 12. people that want to argue with God. So, it says, don't argue with the Almighty in so many words. Verse 10, he cannot contend with him who is mightier than he. So in modern day language or making the application, here's that someone that wants to argue that life has meaning without God. It's just going to increase his own vanity. Oh, life has meaning. You know, look what I'm doing, this goodwill, this community service, this chamber of commerce work, this foundation. I'm helping some people. Yes. But it's futile to argue with God. Solomon offers two questions. First one, for who knows what is good for man in life? So here's this man that wants to argue with God. I know what's good for me in life, and it's this work under the sun that I'm dedicating myself to, and that's my religion. Oh, you left God out. So Solomon says, who knows what is good for man in life? All the days of his vain life, which he passes as a shadow. You know what your life is? Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 9, verse 5, the living know they shall die. In Job 7, verse 6, my days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle. That's it. That's your life. In Job 14, verse 1, man that's born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. Comes forth like a flower, cut down. He flees as a shadow. And continues not. What's your life? Psalm 90, verse 10, the days of our years are 70 years. If by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is their strength labor and sorrow, it's soon cut off and we fly away. 1 Peter 1, verse 24 says, all flesh is as grass. All the glory of man is the flower of the grass. Grass withers. The flower thereof falls away. What's your life? So when Solomon begins in this chapter, you know, these three evils that are common among men, that materialism, that workaholic, and now what, someone that wants to argue with God, this is satisfactory to me on earth, but with no eternal view. Oh, your life. You ask any number of people, what is good for man in life? What purpose should I give in my life? You may get a different answer from the many answers from this, from the number of people you ask. But this one says, oh, this is good for me, and so I think it should be good for you too. So ask someone else, they say something different. Someone said, man, what is good? Vanity? Your life is a shadow? Passes away. Second question, who can tell a man what will happen after him under the sun? I can't tell what will happen to me next week. I can't tell what will happen to anyone's life under the sun. What will happen tomorrow? I don't know. Don't know. James said in James chapter 4, we'll close. Chapter 4, verse 30, James says, come now, ye that say. All right, so here's the person that says, today or tomorrow we'll go into such and such a city. Spend a year there. Buy and sell. Trade and get gain. Then James says, whereas you don't know what will happen tomorrow. Well, what is your life? It's a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. For that we ought to say, if the Lord will, we will do this or that. And then the next verse. Now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. That's what Solomon said. Verse 1, there's an evil that's common among men. That arrogance that says, it's my life and I'm going to do all the time. I'll dedicate myself to materialism. Be a workaholic without God. And I'm going to argue with God. Last illustration I'll give you in closing. Someone said, what did my notes say? No, opens there. When you were born, you were crying and everyone around you was smiling. Live your life so at the end, you're the one smiling and everyone around is crying. Sad to see you go. Yeah. So that's the lesson. Chapter 6. Lord willing, next Sunday, chapter 7, at least half the chapter. I say Lord willing. It's a long chapter. Paradoxes. It's not two doctrines, by the way.
No.
Paradox.
Balance.
It's a dad joke. All right, so I'll, always at the end of a lesson, we sing a song of encouragement, song of invitation. And we need to learn the lesson that Solomon gives, a man with experience. He's saying, let me tell you all that I've seen under the sun. So we need to take heed. You know, listen up, as we say. If you're not a Christian, you've not been baptized for a remission of sins, you have that opportunity tonight. If you want to ask brethren for strength or encouragement or prayers while we're gathered here, we can accomplish that also. So we sing an invitation song, or a song of encouragement, a song of exhortation. And if you need to respond to that song or that invitation this evening, just come and have a seat beside me while we're singing this song, and we'll answer your desire or your request.